Greetings, shopmates, and welcome to Tinkering Bells, a show about DIY, design, and all things hands-on. The sky's the limit as we talk props, metalwork, cosplay, woodwork, leather, electronics, and so much more. I'm Tim Robertson, your host, so strap on your tool belts because we're about to get into some skill sharing, y'all. Today, I'm going to be joined by a maker who lit the torch for women in a shop on television. I don't want to give away too much, but this maker is at it again, revolutionizing the world of edutainment one show at a time. So if that doesn't make you want to stick around and hear more, you might be at the wrong podcast. But first, let's go ahead and have our tech talk of the day. So we're going to be talking a lot about explosives today, and I am so excited. But let's first back it up. Where did C4 get its start? Well, C4 is what's known as a plastic explosive or a putty explosive because it's a soft and hand moldable form of explosive material. It's this hand moldability that allows you to directionalize which way a blast will actually occur. Now, the very first plastic explosive was Jellionite, which was invented in 1875 by Alfred Nobel. During World War II, though, a number of RDX-based explosives were developed by the British, and this included compositions C1, C2, and C3. C3 would later be replaced in the 1960s by what we now know as C4. Now, C4 is still an RDX-based explosive, but this version has added in a binder and plasticizer, which helps overcome the brittleness that you see with C3 in cold weather. Now, C4 is really interesting because C4 is what is known as metastable, which means that it's very stable and insensitive to most physical shocks, meaning that it's really unable to be detonated by anything other than an actual shockwave. So you can shoot at it, you can put it on fire, you can do microwaves at it, or you can even try to drop it as hard as possible on a hard surface, but it's going to stay stable and it's not going to explode. The only way to have C4 explode, again, is to utilize a shockwave from a detonator or a blasting cap. Now, when you do get it to go off though, C4 has an explosive velocity of 8,092 meters per second. To put that in perspective, satellites that are in polar orbit have to travel at a speed of 8,000 meters per second in order to remain in orbit around the Earth. That's really fast, y'all. Well, that's it for the tech talk. As always, you can join in on the conversation with my maker friends and me on the Tinkering Bells Instagram and Twitter pages. Just search for Bells Tinkering, hit follow, and share your DIY adventures together with us. Have a tool you want to learn about? Let me know, and it may be featured in a future episode. Tell us what you liked, what you hated, or possibly even what we missed. So now we're going to be getting into the main event, and I am so excited to introduce our next maker who honestly does not even need an introduction. So drumroll, please, presenting Carrie. Carrie, thank you so much for joining me. How are you?
Hello. This is very cool. Have we ever done an interview together?
I don't think that we have.
Because we have a lot in common, as we both were Mythbusters for a time.
We were, and we're both redheads, which everyone brings up as well.
Right. Can I just say, if this is a little controversial, but you got mad robbed. You should have made it. I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
I think what happened, I'm going to say this, and I don't know if anybody said it out loud, but the last people to make it were the redhead and the other finalists. And when the people behind the scenes sent me a picture of the finalists, I was like, dude, does that look a little like me and Grant and Tori? Just a little bit. And everybody was dying, but keeping it a secret. I'm just like, oh, man. And then when they cut you, I was like, no, I think it should have just been the three of you. Who cares if it looked the same?
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting one. The minute I found out the contest was happening, I was like, there better be girls competing. If there's not girls competing, girls, like, this is going to be complete, like, crap, because that's what the show has always been for me, was, you know, you enabling it to be normalized for we as women to be in shops. And so I, like, threw my hat in the ring and I was like, I just want to make sure every day I come out there and I show little girls and little boys everywhere that, like, we can hold our own no matter what. And I do remember, like, having the conversation with someone when everything went down the way it did. And I'm like, you know, I was the only two MVP winner and I was the only female finalist. how do I explain this to little girls? Because, you know, the whole point of it was to go and say, like, we're equal. The world sees us as equal. And instead, they see the woman standing there with two MVPs against all the men with one each. And I still don't get the job. And it was kind of one of those moments that I'm like, this is engineering and science right now. This is actually very representative of what we face every single day. We can have twice the accolades and still not get the job, you know? So it was one of those things that I'm like, well, this isn't the message I wanted to send, but I guess I'm getting to be a lot more honest with the message I'm standing with.
Well, I will tell you, I mean, nothing to disparage Brian and John at all, because they were incredible.
Oh, they're so fun.
I just think the three of you could have made it and it would have been perfectly okay. I think it would have been awesome. And you did send a good message to little girls, because your reputation behind the scenes, because I'm still friends with all the people that were working on your show, is that you were highly capable and easy to work with. I mean, you did an incredible job. So you made yourself a role model there.
I appreciate that. I mean, as the person that lit the torch for all of us women in the shop, like, to hear that from you is like very, I appreciate that to my soul.
And your comic book, my daughter read, so.
Yay! I'm glad. So has your daughter done any of the experiments in the comic?
She is a tween at the moment. So if she did, it was behind closed doors. She locks me out a lot. And I found things in her room that definitely look like experiments. Why is there a slime in this? Like, how do I clean this?
You know, I think as a tween back in the day, there were way worse things that our parents were finding. So slime is a good thing. Slime's a good
thing. Yeah. At least she's being creative.
Yeah. I love that so much. Speaking of being, I guess, tweens and below, you grew up a tinkerer as well, right? Like, this wasn't a later in life evolution. You've been doing this since you were knee high to a duck, right?
Well, my dad told me that I was a myth buster since I was a little girl, because I did experiments on my sister. I tried to like drop teddy bears down a laundry chute. And then I tried to drop my sister and they walked in just as I was pushing her into the cabinet to see, because I was like, oh, they did fine. They landed on the pillow. Your turn. I tried to push her on the swing set until she went over. She cried. Anyway, she survived better than Buster. But I've always been, I would say, a maker. I was always buildings from the time I was little with whatever I could find. So, you know, instead of garbage, an old Cheerios box would turn into the human skull as accurate as I could get it with tape. And I would just kind of sit there, latchkey kid style, with a lot of MTV in the background, because it just came out and it was amazing. And just maybe old pantyhose became a whole bunch of little dolls, like constantly making whatever I could, especially around Halloween. So I think I just knew I always wanted to make things, and art clearly came naturally. And so special effects seem like the best marriage of sculpture and art and making and still being exciting. So I wanted to get into special effects. I mean, I live really close to Lucas Ranch and all the Star Wars and Pixar and all these amazing places that are doing cool creative things. And I loved monster movies and the making of Thriller and the making of Star Wars. And I always watch those extra scenes. So when I tried to get a job doing it, I found Jamie Heineman from M5 Industries fortuitously. And I weaseled my way into an internship, which isn't that hard with a man who doesn't want to buy anything. And I said I'd work for free.
That's a pretty good way to get in as an intern, for sure. You just volunteer.
I will come in, I will work for free. And it just turns out my first day as an intern, first day we're filming Mythbusters. So I was cleaning the shop, I was helping, I was always in the background cackling. So you know, when you see the experiments and you're like, who's that cackle? That's me in the background. Sometimes they panned the other interns where we're going like, what are you doing?
You know, one of the coolest parts for me watching you with the OG Mythbusters was that it never felt like, you know, everyone talks about like the girls in the shop, the boys in the shop. It never felt like there was a gender in the shop. It was just builders in the shop, playing, tinkering. And I love, you know, you talking about the SFX part of it, because I think a lot of people automatically are like, oh, Mythbusters are just makers. They're, you know, they're just the people that are in the shop. But it actually was the SFX backgrounds that you all brought that brought so much to the show. And I will say, I think that's the one thing that in the new iterations we were missing. You know, there was no one that had that really amazing SFX background that could bring that artistic and theatrical portion to the myths that you all just naturally were able to do, because it was like just another one of the hats that you could wear, which I think added so much, especially to this. Oh my gosh, the Star Wars myths were always my favorite to watch.
I didn't like those ones as much, and I will tell you why. We were testing things in a mythical world far, far away in a different galaxy. So I'm just like, how do we know the gravity's the same pull? Like, how do we know, like, I mean, the mass of that planet is probably different. They got two moons. Like, no, all of this is different. Like, how do we know that the density of the wood is going to be the same in that giant smasher that they put into when they smash the walker, the chicken walker in the Ewok village? Like, none of the metal, every component of it was fictional. So for me, I really like the stuff that's like, this happened in China in 400 BC, because we could research what they used and what they had. And the results were more concrete for me, more, I guess I got a critical thinking science brain from so much having to do it over the years, that when we get to the ones that were like a little too fantastical, just like, I do it, but I feel like, can we really call this busted?
Yeah, I understand that. It's like, well, no, it's still true in whatever universe. It's busted on Earth, but maybe we just did it wrong.
Mind you, it looks very cool. I got to wear my R2-D2 dress.
The log smashing, my goodness.
And Tori and Grant and Adam, they all worked on Star Wars. So they had a general knowledge beyond anybody else.
I mean, you're working with everyone that understands how to make a otherworldly thing of Earth, right? Which is super cool. For those of you that are listening, anything that comes up that sounds like you should be seeing it, like the next 5 minutes, is going to be something that'll be on the YouTube. You can find it, follow my bio and go to the link. But you have some incredible creations behind you right now. And I see you post these on your Instagram, and I'm just so in love with them all. Like, you have this little menagerie of creatures.
See, maybe I can see them better. I've got more than you can see, actually.
Wow. Oh.
So those were from when my daughter was young. I usually have a very dark sensibility, and my sculptures are a little more macabre, but when my daughter was young, I was a little more mommy-esque. And so we came up with these creatures that were mommy's manor monsters. And so anytime she was doing something disgusting or vile, we came up with a little creature that kind of counteracted that. For instance, this is the first one right here. So my daughter had a problem flushing the toilet, as most little children do. This right here is the poop monster. Now, I made this critter, and I tacked him to the edge of the toilet as if he's climbing out, and just left him in there so that when she walked back in and saw the poop monster climbing out of the toilet and screamed at him, "Mom, what is that?" I'm like, "Well, honey, if you don't flush, your poops come alive, and then they want to find their mommy, and that's you." So that just started a whole cascade of, you know, the nose picking monster and the hand washing and the manners monster and the tattletales and just a million different little critters that are supposed to teach us something at the same time. And it was fun coming up with the stories with her and how they came to be, and at the same time, disgusting, vile habits would be somewhat squished.
I feel like this should be a children's manor book series. I'm just saying.
That's an idea. I wrote something at one point, and I never kind of went through with it because she got older and I went on to other life lessons. But hey, you know what? I should have done that during pandemic. I had all this time.
Is there something during the pandemic that you finally got to like check off the box and say, yes, I've been putting that off for too long, and now it's finally done?
I mean, I think that I thought I would do more things. I did a lot of home renovations. I really thought, like, every week, I'm like, it should be over soon. So I never took on as many things as I wanted to. I did get very creative. I was taking care of my daughter like 100% of the time because schools were out and we were homeschooling and everything was so crazy. So I'd have to come up with what we're doing for PE class today and that kind of thing. So I did get to have some really fun creative times with her. We'd have Nerf wars, and I made her do ninja training where I would like draw a little map down on the, you know, I live kind of high up on the second floor, and I would draw a little map on the sidewalk. And then I said, okay, you have to stay within this grid. And she'd go, oh, okay. And then I went upstairs and I had a whole bunch of water balloons, and I leaned out the window. I just went, don't get hit. And just started helping her with water balloons, and she's dodging. I'm like, this is PE. It's ninja training.
That sounds so fun. Wow. So you got to get pretty creative with that. I think all the kids that hear this are going to be like, I want to go to Carrie's version of homeschooling because mine was really boring.
Some of my homeschooling was a little too much for her. I made all those Amazon boxes, I turned into a Target and I put it in the garage and I found all these throwing knives. So I was trying to teach her to throw knives and she was just not having it. She was like, you're crazy. And just bam. But I think it convinced her to go do math.
I like that. I also learned to throw knives during the pandemic. That has been a skill I have been sharpening. So that one's been really fun. Because I go to this archery range here to shoot my bow and I just saw these logs and I was like, I wonder what those are for. And then I was talking to someone. They're like, oh yeah, those are probably for throwing knives. And then they sent me a set of throwing knives. So I was like, oh, well, when you have it, you must learn to wield your weapons.
It's pretty fun. I mean,
I'm not very good at it.
I'm not either, actually. I should be better at it for as many times as I went downstairs, but you know.
I want to kind of circle back. So speaking of books. So we actually met for the first time in person at San Diego Comic-Con. And I remember walking up to you and letting you know that your book, Crash Test Girl, had empowered my dad to fart in public. Not that he wasn't doing that in the past, but now he was loudly announcing when he was and was every time he'd be like, Dad, stop doing that. He's like, no. Carrie said that it is empowering to fart. And so you empowered my dad, who, you know, is who taught me all of my tinkering skills at a very late age to finally own his scent.
No, it was so embarrassing when you were a kid, and it was embarrassing all the way up until Mythbusters. And then when I learned that there's no dignity in television and having no shame will get you further, it just became a lot more fun. I guess that, you know, my kid will have no shame around it. She'll be like, I think that's more like an 8, maybe a 7.5.
There are so many lessons from the show that I think resonated, you know, with the audience and especially with kids. And one of those is that failure is always an option. And so is there a failure that you experienced that you feel like had you not gone through it, no matter how hard it was at the time, that you would not be the person that you are today?
I mean, tons. For one, I couldn't get a job in special effects anywhere. I tried ILM and all the places, and tripping and falling into Jamie's was so fortuitous for me. So I just kept trying and trying, and it worked out. When I tried to write my book for the first time, I don't know what I'm doing. The treatment that I sent out was long and not very good, apparently, because I got turned down by every publisher. Like, everyone that I went to was like, yeah, but... And so I ended up doing what I always did on Mythbusters is find an expert. So I found a writer to be like, help me. And she just was like, oh, took it all apart. We came up with a theme. And I learned from somebody who knew what they were doing and went back and repitched it. And I got 3 offers. So I kept going with it. And if I had failed and stopped and thought of that as something that wasn't just a step on the way, it wouldn't have led me to where I am, because from Crash Test Girl, I ended up starting to work on a show called Crash Test World, which was named after the book, which is the current show I have on Discovery Plus and Science Channel currently, and is also on the platform that I'm working on called Explore Media.
Yes, and so that platform is so cool. Could you tell the audience a little bit about how you guys are redefining edutainment with the Explore Media platform?
I met this woman who basically, it was a cold call in a hotel room. She and I had a friend in common. And she's like, I want to make a TV show based on this streaming thing that I've got going on. She was doing small, short format videos of people traveling around the world and putting lesson plans with them. It was a nonprofit. It was called projectexplorer.org. But she wanted to take it to the next level and do an actual TV show. And her friend said, anybody in the world could host it for you, who would it be? And she said, Carrie Byron. And my friend Dallas said, I'm working on a show with her right now. I'll give you her phone number. So she called me and we talked for like an hour about everything that we wanted the world to be and how we wanted global citizenry and how cool what she was doing was and how, you know, we just kind of fell in work love. And we came up with Crash Test World, which is a show that highlights innovations and innovators who are looking at the big problems to solve in the world and all over the world. So it was like travel adventure as well as highlighting and signal boosting people who are giving us so much hope. People are trying to create peace in Israel or food sustainability in San Francisco. You know, we met the coolest people, and every day I'd come off set, was like, I feel good. It's not like the news feed crunching down my soul every single day with bad news. It was like, no, there are so many people out there that are actually making a difference. So this became more and more of a passion for me. And we realized we need to do more of this. Highly produced, beautiful content that is made for family viewing the way MythBusters was, and create it in short format and bring it to where kids are learning, which is their tablets and their screens and their laptops. So we decided to put together this streaming service that aligns with all of the curriculum and US standards and create lots and lots of different and license lots of different short format videos that have lesson plans for teachers and for families at home. It's aimed at teens and tweens, but it's really family viewing, because if you want to explain something to a young person, you explain it like they're old. You don't talk down to them. If they're 12, mm-hmm. you explain it like they're 35. If they're 35, you explain it like they're 12. Mm-hmm. And we made this just epicenter of short stories that come with value. And we just started a Kickstarter to kind of get the rest of our curriculum written. And we're launching June 1st. So it's kind of a big deal for us. We just today signed a contract to license a whole bunch of activists, LGBTQ plus podcasters that have created this amazing just story about, you know, like the kids that are finding their way in the world. It's called It Gets Better. Very, very cool. We have licensed Girl Rising about how education impacts girls around the world. I mean, everything has a real beautiful purpose, and it's everything from math to home ec to mental health. So hopefully this will take off and it will be like the new Netflix for edutainment or education.
I loved Crash Test World. And for those of you that haven't seen it, go see it now. You have done in that series for technology and kind of this, the whole STEM envelope, what Anthony Bourdain did with food. You're taking tech and you're using it as a medium to discuss bigger things. It is something that I was so happy to hear Discovery picked up, because it definitely needs to be everywhere. Like, everyone needs to see it. And I love that it's also going to be on Explore Media. And those that are listening, if you want to help, you know, expand what Explore Media is doing, make sure to head over to their Kickstarter. And again, on June 1st, they're launching. So check that out for sure. It's incredible, like truly incredible what you guys are doing. So,
well, I have to say, that is the best compliment you could have given me, because my dream was to become the Bourdain for tweens. There's less swearing, but there's just as much politics and trying to tell a story through something we have in common, because we all eat, we all play, we all love, we all want our families safe. So we're telling stories like what it's like to be a Syrian refugee in Berlin. And, you know, you want to talk about the refugee crisis, it kind of goes over people's head. It washes past when it's too big to just bite on. So we tell the story of one refugee family and you can relate to it. My first interview with the family for Crash Test World in the Berlin episode, I had to take a moment because I started to cry, because I realized how similar I was to the mother on the show and how similar the little girl was to my daughter. And I just had this moment of empathy where it's like, if I can make this happen for other people, like, this show is a success to me already. Like, if you can have a moment of just connection with somebody on the other side of the world. So I just really want people to understand, like, a kid in Tokyo is the same as a kid in Kansas, is the same as a kid in Delhi. We're all just people, and we have more in common than we have in differences. So there's my pitch.
I love it, though, that human experience and bringing it full circle of like kind of showcasing that interconnectivity of life in general, and how, you know, none of us is operating in a bubble. We're all hurting. We're all loving. We're all giving and taking. Like, it's all a similar experience. And when we can find those points of connection, it brings us so much closer. And I feel like, especially like as a nation, we've had a lot of reasons to feel divided lately. And it's nice to have something that actually helps bring us back together. And I do have to say, one of the things that Bourdain always had to was this timbre in his voice, that whether you wanted to like feel or not, you automatically felt, and you have it. There's this just absolutely beautiful cadence that just resonates like in the heart and soul as you're explaining these stories, you know, through the voiceover part of it too. So like bar none, I'm a huge fan of the show. I think everyone should see it and watch it. It's very, very, very well done. I enjoyed it.
You have me fully blushing in this, this love fest here. Mutual Admiration Society. I feel the same about you.
I appreciate that. So, okay, let's get out of this, these emotions. So tools, let's get back to tools for a second. If you had to pick one tool that you felt every person in the world should know how to use, which one would you pick? Oh, we're going to get to see it.
I know this is very basic, but my favorite thing in the world is a Leatherman Wave. See, you've got everything you need on here. You've got screwdrivers, you've got pliers, knives. There's even a file on here that, I mean, I can't tell you how many broken nails I've had that I needed to use this for anyway. So it works for everything. I used to pluck my eyebrows with the pliers. Like, this is beauty. This is utility. I had a clip on it so it would slip right on my boot. So I took it with me everywhere. It was also a hammer. It's doors open when they needed to. I mean, it's a multi-tool, but I really like the simplicity of something that everybody can have. It's not too expensive. And I've taken this thing around the world. I've fixed outlets in my hotel room that were broken. I leave a hotel room cleaner and in better shape than I got there.
I love it. And TSA has not, you know, procured yours. So you must be smart enough to always leave it in the actual checked-in bag.
Check in. For a while, Leatherman had a bracelet that had all of the tools kind of in it, but it was so heavy. I kept hurting myself with it, but it was very cool. It was kind of industrial looking, and that way you could get through TSA if you needed.
I like that. You just sneak it through. No, it's just my jewelry. You can scan it.
Just FYI, they also won't let you take duct tape.
On the plane.
Mm-hmm. Or zip ties.
The zip ties, I understand. The duct tape.
Yeah. Duct tape does it. It's the same reason. Like, you could use it in bad ways, I guess.
Interesting.
I got mine confiscated. So I'm just saying.
I also read, I think you were coming back from Crash Test World, that you got your backpack confiscated for, was it explosive residue? What?
Yes. Well, I take my backpack everywhere with me, and I work a lot with black powder and that kind of thing. And I was leaving Israel, and I had also been at the border in a Palestinian village, and I went, tried to get through their security. And when they did the wipe, they found, you know, ordnance. So they gave me back all my stuff in like a baggie that they poured out, and they confiscated my backpack, and they tagged me for the full search. Like, things got taken apart, like cameras, everything. Oh. I was there for a very long time. And the funny thing was, like, okay, now I you know, don't have a backpack. I just have this bag of whatever stuff they didn't confiscate. And I get on the airplane, and I'm sitting there. I was like, oh, thank God, I'm finally on the airplane. And I was at the window, and the guy in the middle seat, his phone rings, and he picks it up, and he waits a second, and then he looks at me with this crazy look on his face, like, what is happening? And he said, is your name Carrie Byron? And I looked at him like, yeah. He's like, it's for you. And he hands me the phone. I don't know this guy. He hands me the phone, and I'm already super freaked out. And they're like, we just wanted to make sure you got on that plane. I'm like, yeah.
I handed the phone
back to him, and he's like, who are you? Like, I know he thinks I'm a spy. Definitely thinks I'm a spy. I'm like, yes, I'm leaving the country. It was such a moment of Big Brother.
It's like, wait, is your family fans, and they saw me going through the whole rigmarole, and they just wanted to check, and you just don't know who I am? Or are you the guy that is going to get anyone if they hijack the plane? Are you the air marshal? Because I know you can't tell.
I'm a threat, clearly. I mean, I understand. And the funny thing is that when I got back to San Francisco, my backpack never made it. They never gave it back. I don't know what they did with it. But I also found out when I got back from San Francisco that we had gotten bed bugs. So joke's on them. They probably infected everything that they had with the bed bugs. We figured it out from the hotel. And, you know, I got the, you know, by the time I got home, I had to just go into my garage, strip down everything, throw out the luggage that I had, boil everything in hot water, and run up the stairs naked and jump in the shower to wash off, because bed bugs, if they get in your house, they don't go away.
No.
It is so hard to get rid of them. So I'm just saying, television is not necessarily as glamorous as everyone thinks it is.
No, it's a lot of suitcase, like carrying, a lot of hauling, a lot of hotels. Like, is there anything that when you're traveling abroad, because you did travel a lot for the show, is there like go-to items that you keep in your bag? Like,
I always wear a compass as my good luck charm, which also is a compass. So that works out, and it's kind of pretty and antique. I always carry a bandana before pandemic even, because I found it the most utility thing you could have. It can, you know, be a dust mask. It can be something that ties your hair back. It can be something you carry screws with. It can be a purse. It can be anything you want. So I always carried a bandana everywhere I went, as well as either wipes or hand sanitizer, because when you travel a lot and you talk to flight attendants a lot, you find out the nasty things people do. You know, take off their shoes and clip their toenails, change their baby's diapers on that tray that you eat off of. So I get on the plane, you know, in the old days of Mythbusters with Tori, and he would just laugh because I was just wiping everything down around me, because I hate getting sick. Mm-hmm. And I just never want to get sick. So I'd sit back in my clean little bubble and feel fine. And then after a while, he started doing it too. And since COVID, I feel like everybody is now. They've all come to my level.
I'm actually kind of looking forward to doing a convention after this, because I feel like maybe con crud won't happen because people will have learned. But then again, maybe it will.
Nah, people are still nasty. It'll all go back to normal. I'm happy about maybe the handshake going away. I never found that necessary. I actually prefer, like, we're right here. We can greet each other. I'm looking you in the eyes. I'm smiling at you. I'm good with maybe the bow.
The curtsy. Or
the hi, or the Wi five, which is the wireless high five.
I like the Wi five. That's fun.
Better than like occasionally a very sweaty hand gripping you in an awkward way.
Yeah.
I'm done with handshakes.
Yeah. And see, and I'm from the South, so they're big huggers. And I'm like, especially at cons, I'm like, no, please. Especially when you're as short as me, you just get swallowed whole. Like,
did you ever, when you took pictures with people, did you ever get the phenomenon of what we called stink shoulder?
Yes.
Yes, where you're taking a picture, they put their arm around you, and we're shorter, so our shoulders, it's a hard thing to do, because you either have a shirt that is going to keep all the sweat and body odor in it from hundreds of people, and that just gets funky, like that perfume just mixes with everybody's body odor. Yep. And then you could either shed that to go off to the next thing, or one time I was like, oh, I'll just wear a tank top because I can wash it off, but that's nasty.
Yeah.
Nasty. So it's... You know, it's a problem solving issue. I generally wore a shirt I didn't mind getting rid of.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the way to go. Or you just wear body paint, then no one wants to touch you. That's what I've learned at conventions, is that if you go as a character that is purple or orange, everyone just kind of parts the seas. You get your own little path. It's great.
But don't you get sweaty at conventions at all? Because they're so hot. Well, they might not be in the middle. They're probably at 20% capacity. So.
Oh, yeah. I don't even know. Every one of them I've been doing has been virtual. But like I do Starfire, and I do the Teen Titans Go version. And it's like a tank top and skirt. So it's not as hot. And then I use the MAC colors are really good about not running or anything. But I also, Party City, fun fact, has every single color of the rainbow in tights. So I don't even have to paint the lower half of my body anymore. I just don an orange pair of tights and match it with the makeup.
Grant always loved the cosplay, and I loved watching him walk through the convention, because I'd wear a mask so you couldn't see me. And he loved it when people would come up and talk about his outfits. And it was so fun.
That's the one thing that I really love about Comic-Con, is that it becomes about the actual build and you're wearing it. Like, I actually ran into a couple and they were Batman and Wonder Woman, but it was all chainmail. Like, they literally made the entire costume out of chainmail, like piece by piece. And like the one guy was like, yeah, this is like 7,000 hours of work. And I'm like, what? Like, my mind was just like, how do you? And it's like each little one clipping. And it was gorgeous, though. Like, the craftsmanship that goes into cosplay, like, to me, is just amazing. And then you have like the low key kind of cosplay that goes on all the way up to these elaborate pieces. You see the Transformer guys walking through that can't even like get through doorways that they have to open the garage doors for. And I'm always just like, oh, I just want to look at it all. And I actually do hide. I have a single day at each con that I play what I call cosplay hide and seek. And if you find me, you get like a prize pack of science stuff. But the biggest reason I do it is because I find people are more likely to actually have a conversation with me about their build than if I come and they see me, like it ends up being conversation about the show, or they don't want to really talk about their build. They get shy about it. So I like to hide in plain sight and like hear about all of the awesomeness and trials and tribulations that came with them designing what they're wearing. So
we love the maker stuff. I love hearing about those stories too, because it's just, there's some weird little tips you find from people doing things with materials that weren't meant to work in that way.
Yeah, like it's really, really neat to see how they change out things. Like I learned that you could get a lot of the tools that you need to work with leather. If you go to like a clay place instead, you can get the sponges, you can get the etchers, all of it for like a quarter of the cost that you would pay if you went to a proper leather shop and got their special sponges and special etchers. And it's the same exact tool, but just by talking to people that do cosplay work, because they, you know, most of the time are trying to figure out how to do it cheaper because it may be a single use item. I've found out like the easy hack to like go to my local clay shop and pick up supplies, which I loved. Well, I was like, yeah.
I don't know if this is a good one, or because I don't know if they're allowed to do this, but when I needed sculpture tools, dentists throw out a lot of their tools when they're spent. So I recycled them and took them, and there's some great weirdly shaped tools you can do sculpture with.
Oh, that's a really great idea. Yeah, because the ones that they like scrape your teeth with and they go, oh, your gums are bleeding, you're not flossing. You're like, yeah, it's nothing to do with the metal pokey thing you put in there. But like that one reminds me a lot of what you used to like scratch and slip the clay together with. I can't remember. It's like,
yeah, or I mean, just even really fine detail in different, you know, when you're trying to get into weird spaces, it'll have a curvature that can kind of help you. That's a strange hack, but
that's a good one though. I like it a lot. So that's one of the things though, that you do a lot of, like this beautiful putting the A in steam, as I would say. Can you talk a little bit, because one of my favorite things that you do is you actually use your black powder for art and make really cool explosions. So, you know, we kicked off talking about booms. I would love to get some insights into what inspired you to first use explosions in art pieces.
Well, obviously on Mythbusters, there were a lot of explosions and the explosions were beautiful. Watching them in high speed and all the rolling propane burning in the air was beautiful. But, you know, during the cleanup, there was this crazy detritus that's left over and different explosives would leave different markings in different ways. And I always loved the sort of smoky, scattery, speckly just mess that was left behind by black powder. So I started messing with it. And I took really quality thick watercolor paper and I would mask off an area with, say, a big metal pipe and some wood and some different things. And I would sprinkle a little black powder into it. Just because I'm trying to be, of course, as safe as possible, wearing my safety glasses, of course, and using electric matches that I found for model rocketry. I do it at a distance with some stereo cord and a drill battery, just light it off. And, you know, some of it escapes from underneath the metal and some of it gets contained and shows sharp edges. And every single time I explode black powder, it looks different and it's really beautiful. So I've practiced with different rifle and pistol powders and black powder of different grains. And I've kind of learned what's going to do what color and kind of how it's going to behave depending on the weather or, you know, if there's more moisture in the air. And I've learned a masking process that I use with sort of a clay so I can draw a picture and mask off areas that I want and smash clay in different ways I want on the paper and then blow up stuff around it. And then afterwards, I can paint on it or I can paint before, but I've kind of made it part of my multimedia. I don't sell a lot of it because I use it for maybe fundraisers. It's kind of my thing. Mm-hmm. I like doing it a lot. So I do it for me. I think if I started creating for an audience too much, I would lose the joy of making it myself. And I already have a job. So I give it away. I actually, because people asked a lot, I created a print for the Kickstarter that we're doing with Explorer Media. So that at a certain price point, you can get like a high quality print of it. And I made like an exclusive one just for that project. That way I could offer something to the public. But, you know, maybe in the future, I'll do some prints. I've never really experimented quite with how, you know, it's already exploded, but or ignited. But if I put that in the mail, is there anything that's going to detect that?
Oh, yeah. No, that's
really not. Because at that point, it's just charcoal, right? But no, there could be a grain or two left on the page.
There's got to be something, right? Because they definitely catch packages that have things that they shouldn't in them. So
yeah, like you don't want that anthrax showing up in the envelope. So they got to be monitoring some of that. I just don't want Homeland Security showing up in my house and ruining my good times.
I know that's never a good idea.
Though I'm pretty sure I'm on a watch list because the things that I Google.
Oh, I'm positive we all are. Like, there is no way that you can. I mean, I remember when we were doing the painting with explosions episode, I was looking up like blast radiuses and how different materials aerosolizes. And I found a document that really shouldn't exist, but it trains someone to do a good job and not the bad things that happen. Ugh. But it's like, there's just so much. Like, even again today, as I was like, you know, Googling how to, you know, what's the history of C4? What's it made of? And all, surprisingly, Wikipedia tells you exactly how to make C4, which I don't know that that's okay. Like we always used to say on the show, you don't actually give away what is in the mix. You just always say it's these things, but never tell the ratio. And that's how you don't get in trouble. They tell the ratio on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Weird.
It's a dangerous place with there's a lot of recipes that I kind of wish weren't so available.
Yeah. There's been a couple of people that have gotten really hurt, you know? And there's been fatalities because of utilizing the things that they find on the internet and not using, you know, the bomb squad like we always did, and utilizing someone that knows what they're doing and is part of the, you know, explosive ordnance division and can make sure that we don't kill ourselves. You know, it's scary.
I mean, to be honest, I've done some dumb stuff I saw on the internet. So I get the attraction. I tried to do a magic trick with, this was back in the Mythbusters day, where you take the lighter and you kind of light the gas, you put the gas into your hand and then you kind of like light it from your hand and it makes a little poof of fire. And I fully burned off my eyelashes right before I had to do a photo shoot. Like just,
oh my goodness.
All of a sudden I was like, God, that felt like it was too close. And I went flick onto my eyelashes and they just crumbled onto my cheek. And I'm like, great. That's going to be gorgeous in the photo.
Yes. Well, I play with, have you ever played with lycopodium powder? It's called dragon's breath.
No, I don't play. Tell me.
It's basically a powder and you're harnessing a dust explosion. And so it's kind of like people will do the creamer fire, you know, where you blow it out. This is just what magicians use and it's replicable every time. And you can use the smallest pinch and it'll do it. But you can also use like a tablespoon and do it and you get like a bigger poof. But it's something that I've been utilizing a lot recently, and I've like let some friends like learn how to use it, and I'm like, you know, it's good, but you also don't need any kind of credential to order it, and if you use a big enough amount it gets kind of scary, and if you're in a shifting wind and like there's all of these things that could go wrong with it, and I'm like, you know, maybe magician stuff should be, you know, there should at least be a tier of certification to get to play. I mean, because literally the first time I played with it, I just pulled out a candle and the powder, and I looked at the people and I'm like, well, I haven't done this before, so this will be fun. And they're just like, what? Wait, what? And you're just like, ah.
So what do you utilize it for other than pizzazz? Is there like a function or just?
No, it's fire. It just makes a really cool fireball. And it's like what we use it for is to like explain how like a silo dust explosion would happen, you know, and talking about like how surface area will affect the actual like burn ratio and stuff. So you get teeny tiny particles, you get more, you know, so yeah, just. Okay. That kind of, you know, it's an educational plus fire thing. Yes. And people,
my people favorite. It.
Yes, it's like the best combination ever. There's one question that I ask everyone, and that is, if you had a superpower, what would it be and why?
Telekinesis, because I think it covers everything. I feel like you don't have to be strong because you can move things. You can move yourself, so you don't really need to fly. I feel like it's kind of it's like the most cheaty of the superpowers.
I like that. You're the first person to say telekinesis, so that's pretty awesome.
What do people usually say?
I get a lot of flying and time control, so I think people just want to get to where they're going faster. That's what it seems like.
Okay, time control seems dumb to me. I feel like I saw enough movies to know that is always going to turn out bad.
That's true. There's so many that you're like, just don't mess with the physics of life. Just let time be what it is. So I also realized that I didn't ask where people can find you and what they will find there. Though I'm sure everyone knows where to find you already, but just in case they don't, I will put links in the bio. So they'll have links to all the Explorer Media and Crash Test Girl and Crash Test World. But other than that, where should they be looking?
I'm all over the socials. I got Twitter is at Carrie Byron, K-A-R-I-B-Y-R-O-N. Instagram and Facebook is The Real Carrie Byron. Other than that, Discovery Plus, you can find Crash Test World. And now, if you guys want my very exciting project, I really want you guys to check it out. So you can go to the Kickstarter that's clearly everything I'm promoting right now and follow the links to the Kickstarter. You don't have to give to it. I just want you to see what we're doing. And if you have a kid, one of the perks is that you get a subscription. So you're kind of just signing up for it. If you need summer learning, all the videos will be available. And then we're going to relaunch with all the curriculum starting on September 1st. So we get the educational videos available and then relaunch for school systems so that they can have lesson plans.
That's amazing. So you guys heard it here first. Make sure, well, not first, because it's all over the place right now. Make sure to go and support Explorer Media. Check it out. If you haven't, make sure to definitely go see Crash Test World. It is incredible. It will change your life and your mind. Thank you, Carrie. This has been so much fun. You're just always a pleasure. This is so great.
Oh, I've been wanting to hang out with you for a while, but pandemic. So this is awesome.
This is so great. And this doesn't have to be the last time. We'll just keep it going.
I'll see you in person at the next con.
Absolutely. I want to thank you for choosing Tinkering Bells as your user's manual for all things maker on a bi-weekly basis. If you want to continue to hear more, don't forget to rate and review the show on your podcasting app of choice, as well as sharing it with your friends. Can't find us? Let me know at tinkeringbellsco@gmail.com. I look forward to seeing you next week. Until then, don't forget to keep making.